Here's the congressional report for New York's 19th congressional district and Representative Antonio Delgado. The website 538.com reports that so far Delgado votes with Donald Trump's positions 0% of the time. This week, on January 23rd, Delgado voted for funding most of the federal government through September 30th without money for a border wall, which passed 234 to 180. He also voted January 23rd for funding the federal government through February 28th without money for a border wall, which passed 229 to 184. And on January 24th, he voted for funding the Department of Homeland Security through February 28th without money for a border wall, which passed 231 to 180.
Wendy Libertore reports in the Albany Times-Union that supplemental nutrition assistance program payments are still supposed to arrive this month despite the government shutdown, but there are reports of problems with the food stamp program. Representative Antonio Delgado, Democrat of Rhinebeck, says some stores are no longer accepting the electronic benefits transfer cards because vendors cannot renew their SNAP license because of the government shutdown. Delgado said, and I quote, "Families and seniors rely on SNAP benefits to get by, but if they technically have the benefits and are unable to use them, they are utterly useless. I urge the Department of Agriculture to immediately extend expired EBT licenses for the duration of the shutdown so that no American will go hungry," end quote. On January 8th, the USDA promised that February SNAP benefits will be sent out, though whether March benefits arrive remains uncertain. Read the full story in the Albany Times-Union. Women marched for various reasons in Hudson, Albany, Woodstock, and hundreds of other towns around the country Saturday, January 19th. In Hudson, Representative Antonio Delgado spoke in the cold after hundreds marched down Warren Street from the town's public square to the promenade near the Amtrak station and Hudson River waterfront.
First, let me just say a couple things about Lacey. In case you didn't know, this is hard work. What you're doing is very hard work. And it takes dedication, it takes determination, it takes love, it takes commitment, it takes passion, it takes sacrifice, it takes humility, it takes vulnerability, it takes it all. And I can tell you, me and my wife live this every day. And I have no better partner in the world to educate me on what it means to lean into your love, what it means to be vulnerable, what it means to be humble, and to embrace this for what it is. And that is the fight for equality. So thank you, the love of my life, for all the work that you do on me and on us, and what we do together, hopefully, to stress the importance of family, community, and love beyond race, beyond gender, beyond sexual orientation, beyond religion. But lying in the strength of our shared humanity, the dignity that lies in that, which comes from a higher power.
MidHudsonNews.com is reporting the U.S. Supreme Court issued a ruling January 22nd that allows President Donald Trump's ban on transgender troops to go into effect. Asked by WGXC-FM for his reaction to the court's decision, U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado said, and I quote, "No one should be barred from serving in our military because of their gender identity." End quote. In a statement to MidHudsonNews.com, U.S. Representative Sean Patrick Maloney called the ruling, and I quote, "an incredibly disappointing decision that will create chaos for transgender people in the military as we await a final decision by the courts," end quote. Governor Andrew Cuomo criticized the decision, saying the ruling gave, and I quote, "an abhorrent policy," end quote, the green light. Cuomo said, and I quote, "President Trump's disgraceful ban on most transgender troops serving in the military repays service and sacrifice with hate, and it takes our military backwards to undercutting this nation's commitment to ensuring equal rights for all," end quote. Read the full story at MidHudsonNews.com. Representative Antonio Delgado, the Democrat of Rhinebeck, spoke on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives January 23rd about the government shutdown.
Mr. Speaker, today I rise to lay bare the calamity that is the shutdown. From phones ringing off the hook to folks I talked to at my town hall on Monday, we've heard from far too many of our fellow citizens struggling because of government inaction. Take the Coast Guard, who I met with in Saugerties last Friday. They're providing invaluable service to our community up and down the Hudson River. Not only search and rescue, but ice cutting, critical to our local economy. They're out there working in the freezing cold and not being paid. This is the first time in history that U.S. Armed Forces service members are not being paid during a lapse in government funding. I repeat, because of the shutdown, members of the U.S. military are working without pay. Government dysfunction of any kind is not good for the well-being of our democratic order. But we are now approaching levels of dysfunction that ought not be tolerable for anyone who cares to preserve the dignity of our citizenry. We must open the government now. And with that, Mr. Speaker, I yield back my time.
You can hear or download that recording on the WGXC Newsroom webpage. Dan Friedman is reporting for the Times Union. U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado has signed on to a new congressional task force focused on addressing the chemical contamination of drinking water in places such as Hoosick Falls and Petersburg. At the same time, the Rhinebeck Democrat acknowledged it will be difficult to prompt the federal government to act as long as the shutdown continues, thereby impacting the Environmental Protection Agency, which oversees water pollution detection and mitigation. Delgado said after a news conference to launch the bipartisan House PFAS task force, and I quote, "One of the things I've heard from a lot of folks back home is I'm all for your priorities, healthcare, water contamination, but none of that is going to matter if you don't get the government open. So that's priority number one," end quote. Delgado is one of 20 House members from both major parties whose districts have been impacted by PFAS contamination. Delgado also announced he is co-sponsoring the bipartisan PFAS Action Act. That measure would designate all PFAS chemicals as risks to human health and the environment and thus make them eligible for the federal Superfund cleanup program. Read the full story in the Times Union.
We're going now to live to Representative Antonio Delgado's town hall meeting, January 21st in Postenkill.
I realize you can't correct all the problems, but some of the problems we're having...
Thank you.
Some of the problems that we're having here in our county is communication. It seems as though Fios is on the other side of the river and not here. And a lot of companies won't come here because the communication is so slow and it affects their business when they have a lot of computers going at the same time. Do you see any way? I know they just come up with the 911 system nationwide. I don't know how that got its standing to move ahead, but how do we get Fios to move ahead to come into a place like Rensselaer County so we can build our business and support?
And that's a great question. I'm a free enterprise person. I believe in free markets. I believe that, you know, profit can incentivize economic investment and growth and innovation, all of that. But at the same time, we are a democracy. And we're not just a nation grounded or founded in capitalism, we're also a nation grounded in democratic principles. And when our democracy isn't strong, and when we allow the principles of capitalism to go unchecked, and we allow companies essentially to only focus on what they want to focus on when they think it's from a purely profit motive standpoint, then certain communities get left behind. That's what happens. And inequality persists and grows. And that's what's been happening for a very long time in our country, for decades now. You know, we've allowed the profit motive to essentially get to such a fever pitch that we're talking about 80% of the country now being asked to share just 20% of the wealth. We're talking about the fact that since the recovery of 2008, 95% of all the gains have gone to the top 1%. We have to restore democracy and fairness to the system. And that's where good, smart, thoughtful government can play a role and say, you know what? How can we either incentivize the private sector to invest in communities, whether it's through tax credits or through subsidies, right? Or if not, invest ourselves. Invest ourselves through public works investment. Spur that growth. Put that money into the community, and it'll pay for itself because communities will then have the ability to access markets and do business and conduct business. And that is how you do it. It does not have to be a purely public works endeavor. It could be a public-private endeavor. But either way, some serious thought has to go into how you incentivize economic investment in rural communities or communities where you don't have as densely populated town centers. That's what it boils down to. It's a numbers game. It's a numbers game for much of corporate America. They're just looking at how they can make a lot of money quickly off of a concentrated population. So we are disadvantaged because of that. Right? And there's a role for good, smart, thoughtful government to play to incentivize and course correct that so that we have a democracy and everybody has an equal opportunity at success in this country.
Thank you.
Facebook wants me to repeat the question. Thank you. Sorry, Facebook. Yes.
Congressman, what's your position regarding the opening of an inquiry into the impeachment of the president?
Yes. So, very important lesson we just learned, I would say, in the last 48 to 72 hours. Had a story come out, BuzzFeed, I believe, reported that there was emails or documentation showing that the president had directed Cohen to lie to Congress. News, alarming story, headlines everywhere. And then Mueller report, where Mueller comes out, which doesn't do that often, and says, wait a second, that's not necessarily an accurate report. I think we have to let the Mueller investigation conclude. We gotta let this thing play out for a lot of reasons. One of which is we have so much partisanship right now that if we let this thing sort of get to a fever pitch before all the facts are laid to bear and all the evidence is made clear, there can be a lot of scapegoating and it can lead to a situation where we don't actually get to the truth because we're too caught up in the partisanship and the extremism. We need facts presented. We need to just have the facts laid bare. And once the facts are laid bare, and I think we all can agree, I think most Americans agree that the way Mueller has been conducting the investigation seems fair. He's slow, he's thoughtful, he's deliberative. He doesn't seem to be bringing a partisan perspective on this. Let the investigation unfold, let all the facts come to bear, and then based on those set of facts, we can make an informed decision that can be justified to the public at large. That is a critical step, not just for the merit of the investigation, but also for the betterment of this country and how we can heal, whatever the outcome might be. We've got to get ourselves in a position where we can come together and trust each other again to some degree.
Farmers everywhere are urging the administration and Congress to work together to reopen the government. And you were glad about the proposal and believe that Democrats need to come back with a counter. So what specific terms do you need to see in that counter proposal in order for you to vote yes to reopen the government?
So the question was what specific terms do I need to see in the Democrats' counter proposal to the now proposal on the table for me to vote yes? Now, I'm going to answer your question, but you're asking me on the spot, right? So, the exact parameters, the exact specifics, I can't sit here and say for sure this is exactly what will create a yes for me. But to answer your question, to be fair to the question, I think one of the things that, as I stressed earlier, so we think we have 400,000 or so attempts to enter the country legally last year. That's down 80% from 2000. 400,000, still a big number. And we need to figure out what sort of funding we can put on the table that can deal with this issue and do so in a way that is smart. We have no operational capacity right now along the entire 2,000-mile-long border, meaning we have no capacity to look at every inch or every mile of that border all at one time. Building a wall across that 2,000 miles is not only going to be wasteful and effective, it's not going to give us operational capacity. We have to be able to use smart technology to figure out ways to be able to review and provide the resources necessary for our border patrol and to make sure that we can see and traffic what's going on across the entire border. So from my vantage point, resources, a healthy, hefty dose of resources that allow us to give us that capacity, I think is a step that from the border security standpoint, I think is a good faith offer to the other side. Say, listen, I agree we need border security, but also keep in mind that when we hear about the influx of drugs coming into the country, that's not coming in over the border. 80-90% of it is coming through our ports. So technology and resources that deal with that reality should also be put on the table. You know, but if we're going to start talking now about even more and more robust security, and the numbers get higher and higher and higher, and we're really going to have this kind of conversation, and the president is talking about DACA, and he's talking about TPS, and he's offering maybe, you know, just a three-year reprieve, that doesn't sound right to me if we're going to go that hefty, right? Maybe we make it permanent for DACA.